Michael Marks, the founder of the Marks and Spencer stores.
My success was built on three things: hard work, the determination to succeed, and the will to live. Without them, I know I would not have survived. However, I cannot ignore the important role that a single penny also played. I was born in 1859 in the city of Slonim, a province in Russia that is now called Belarus. I was the youngest of five children. I never knew my mother, Rochelle, because she died a short time after my birth. My father, Mordecai, had to bring up his children without their mother. Fortunately, my elder sister was old enough to help him look after us. It was a difficult time for us because we were Jewish. There had always been a great deal of discrimination against Jews throughout the Russian Empire, and it was hard to make a living. There were many violent attacks, called pogroms in the Yiddish language, on Jewish businesses and individuals. As a teenager, I quickly realized that there was no future for me in Slonim. My brothers and sisters had grown up and were living their own lives, but I wanted to find a better place with more opportunities. I decided to look for a new life, but I didn't know where I would find it. In 1880, my family wished me well and waved goodbye to me for the last time. At the age of 21, determined to succeed, I started the long walk across Europe. The first 1,000 miles were the worst. I walked from village to village and town to town, trying to find temporary jobs. Communication was difficult as I heard languages that were strange and new to me. I did not know what was ahead, but I managed to survive. The days turned into weeks and then months as I travelled across Poland, Germany and France. Whenever I could, I worked to earn enough money to buy food, and I slept wherever I could find a suitable place to lie down. I realized it was not easy to make friends. Some people were kind, but most did not want to know me. I was a foreigner who did not speak their language. I was dressed in poor clothes that certainly did not improve in appearance as my journey went on. Along the way, I heard there were many Jews in England, and it became my dream to go there. It was nearly 2 years before I reached the French coast. Then I travelled across the sea in an old boat that looked as if it might sink. When I arrived in my new home, it did not feel like home at all. There were no family or friends to greet me, as I had none. There was no job waiting for me, as I had no trade, and I could not even speak English. The worst thing, though, was that I did not have any money. When I arrived in London in 1882, I met some Jewish people who understood my language. That was one piece of good luck. But it wasn't enough, as they had no work for me. I really thought I might starve. Then someone told me to travel north and go to the city of Leeds in Yorkshire. Apparently, there was a company there called Barons that made clothes in a factory. They told me that Barons employed a lot of immigrants, especially Jews. So I decided to go there. As I had no money to take the train, I had to walk. It was another long walk of over 300 kilometres in the rain and wind. Arriving in Leeds, a busy, noisy city, I must have looked a terrible mess, dirty and rough from my journey. When I tried to speak, people walked past, not understanding me. After a while, I found someone who understood the one word I said, Barons, and he showed me the way. In 1884, I met two well-dressed men, one of whom could speak some Yiddish. The other one, whose name was Isaac Dewhurst, had a business selling good quality but inexpensive household items. I explained who I was and where I had come from, and Isaac Dewhurst invited me to his warehouse, the place where he kept his products. There I met other men who spoke Yiddish, and I described my journey from Slonim. Mr. Dewhurst listened while someone translated my story. I explained about the pogroms and the way I had escaped from a difficult and possibly dangerous life and about the journey I had taken across Europe. Clearly, Mr. Dewhurst was impressed that I had survived. I think he also saw my determination to succeed because he offered me £5, which was an enormous amount of money at the time. It was also a considerable risk for him, as he did not know me or what kind of person I was. I was very grateful for his offer, but I turned it down. I didn't want money. I wanted an opportunity to get into business. I asked him if instead of the money, I could have some of his products to sell. He agreed, and we selected which items I should take. I started visiting the small villages and towns near Leeds, where I sold the goods. As soon as I had sold everything, I returned to Mr. Dewhurst with the money I had made. He was pleased to see me and gave me more of his products. I returned to the places I had been to before, as well as going to new villages and towns. Gradually, I became a familiar face, and as people started to trust me, they bought my products. Although I was learning basic English, I still found the language quite difficult. I had a sign made that said, "Don't ask the price, it's a penny," which made things easier. Although people were buying my products and I was making money, the time I spent travelling from place to place reduced the amount of time I had for selling the products. It was time to take the next step. With the money I had saved, I set up a stall in the market in Leeds that was held each Tuesday and Saturday. I also had stalls in markets that were held in the towns of Wakefield and Castleford. Once again, I put a sign on my stall that said, quite simply, "It's a penny." People liked that, and they supported my business. On the days I wasn't at any of the markets, I travelled, and one day I went to a place called Stockton-on-Tees, which was about 100 kilometres from Leeds. It started to rain heavily, and while I was inside keeping dry, I got into conversation with a man called Mr. Cohen. I recognised his accent, and I mentioned that I came from Slonim. He told me he was a refugee from Russia, and invited me to his home. He had a beautiful daughter called Hannah, who was about the same age as I was, and I was made welcome in their home. Meeting Hannah was a turning point in my life. Within a year, on the 19th of November 1886, we got married. Sadly, our first son, who was born in 1887, died during the birth. But fortunately, we were able to have two more children. Simon, who was born in 1888, and then Rebecca. Hannah helped me with the business, preparing the stock for sale and dealing with the finances. The business continued to grow, and in 1891 we decided to move from Leeds to a town called Wigan in Lancashire, about 90 kilometres away from Leeds. It was a smaller town than Leeds, but we had a bigger house. Moving also enabled me to expand the business into Lancashire and Cheshire, where I set up more stalls in the indoor markets of various towns. Indoor markets were developed in the 19th century. Often they were built especially, and in some towns, famous architects were employed to design big, impressive buildings. They protected shoppers and sellers from the weather. They were also safer than being in the street. By 1894, my business had grown so much that I realised I needed a partner who could focus more on the paperwork in the office, while I continued to concentrate on sales. On a visit to Leeds one day, I asked Mr. Dewhurst if he was interested in working with me as a partner. He was still my main supplier of household products, and we had a good working relationship. This time, he declined my request, but he suggested that I ask a man called Thomas Spencer, who worked in his office. Thomas was interested and agreed to buy 50% of my business for £300. We started our business with five words in our minds: quality, value, service, innovation, and trust. On the 28th of September 1894, when Marks & Spencer officially started as a company, we had no idea that it would become so hugely famous. We combined our talents. I was responsible for selling and marketing, and Thomas focused on finance and distribution issues. Thomas was very practical, and due to his years working for Dewhurst, he knew many people and was able to get us goods at the best prices. My job was also to find new markets and organise the sales teams. Soon we had many market stalls in different towns and cities, such as Manchester, Birmingham, Bristol, Cardiff, Hull, Liverpool, Middlesbrough, Sheffield and Sunderland. It was a good partnership, and business increased. In 1897, I was proud to become a British citizen. This country had given me a new start in life. We called our new stalls penny bazaars and added a sign saying, "Admission free." This meant that people could come in and just look around without having to buy anything, which at that time was unusual. We sold biscuits, wool for mending clothes, pins and needles, combs and socks. We also sold sheet music so that people could play popular music and songs on their own musical instruments. By 1900, we had a total of 36 penny bazaars and shops in the high streets of 12 towns and cities. The following year, we built our first warehouse in Manchester, and this became our company headquarters. By 1903, Marks & Spencer had become a public company, and our investment was now valued at £15,000. Now that we were listed in the stock market, we could raise more capital to expand. In 1905, at the age of 53, Tom Spencer retired, and sadly, in the summer of the same year, he died. A man called William Chapman represented the Spencer family in the business after Thomas's death. I invited a man called Bernhard Steele to join us, and he represented my family, and we also employed new and younger managers. We now had a major shop in London and seven branches. I could hardly believe that I had managed to get the new life I had been searching for. Despite having had no training, I built a very successful business. I started with nothing, but worked hard and gained valuable experience. In this new world of mine, I was able to provide a far better future for my family than I had ever dreamed was possible. However, on the 31st of December, 1907, I collapsed and died, aged 48. I did not know it, but Marks & Spencer continued on into the future. After my death, my son Simon took over the business and had a major influence on its development. There are now Marks & Spencer's shops in more than 40 countries all over the world.